Hey Scope Podcast listeners, Lindsay here. We just wanted to say thanks for listening to our shows. We hope you're nerding out as much as we are. Before we get to today's interview, I wanted to let you know that this episode is sponsored in part by Audible.com. And if you listen to other podcasts, well, you know what that means. Go to audibletrial.com/scopepodcast and you can sign up for a 30-day trial and a free audiobook download of your choice. Moomoo and I could talk your ear off about which book you should pick, but you already listened to us enough. Try an audiobook instead. audibletrial.com/scopepodcast. And now, on with the show.
Hi, I'm Moomoo Shu.
And I'm Lindsay Claiborne, and you're listening to Beyond the Microscope.
Hi everyone, welcome back to Beyond the Microscope. Our guest today is Dr. Nikki Vars-McCullough. She is the Global Technical Services and Regulatory Affairs Manager in the Personal Safety Division at 3M. Nikki, thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome.
So I'm going to ask the obvious question. What does a Global Technical Services and Regulatory Affairs Manager do?
Well, a lot of different things. The division that I work in at 3M, the Personal Safety Division, makes personal protective equipment, like respiratory protection, hard hats, eyewear. And the group that I work in offers technical service to companies and governments. We basically help people know how to use that equipment right to keep workers safe and healthy.
How does one get into this field? I mean, I can't imagine it was on your, like, I want to be this when I grow up.
No, I went to college and I was going to be an actress.
Oh, wow.
So that's what I was going to be.
That's a veer.
Yes. Needless to say, my parents weren't all that thrilled, and all of the seniors got all the good parts, and so I kind of liked biology, so I was a biology major, and I was going to be a marine biologist, and I was going to be an ecologist and a physician, but when I got done with college in the 1990s, I was a biology undergrad, kind of a mixed bag of any class they offered. The only job I could get was at this environmental consulting company. And I thought, wow, well, I love the environment. And now I'm going to be consulting about the environment. But it didn't really go that way.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. It turns out that environmental consulting in 1990 was really about asbestos.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So I looked through a microscope for 2 years, determining if walls and tile had asbestos in it. And occasionally taking samples, you know, out of the air to see if it had asbestos in it. Mm-hmm. But through that, I met all these people doing occupational safety and health.
Right.
And I realized that it's a really cool field that combines a medicine. You know, there's a slant on medicine. There's a slant on engineering. And it's all about people. And so I went back to school in occupational safety and health.
Well, so here's a question. Well, I don't know the field quite as much. So when you go back to school for this, what kind of research topics do grad students perform?
So it's all over, you know, in general, occupational safety and health is a broad field, and it's really trying to keep anybody who's working healthy or safe while they're working. So it might be around the levels of noise you're exposed to. It might be around the positions that you sit in at your desk at work to make sure you aren't hurting your back. There's research going on now, a lot on nails, like manicure, pedicure, nail clinics, and the chemicals that those workers are exposed to. So it's anybody at their job that could be exposed to a hazardous chemical, some sort of physical hazard like vibration or a bad posture. And when you think about how much time we spend at work and the variety of jobs available to people, it's an enormous field.
So what part of that did you wind up focusing on when you were studying and getting your PhD?
So I actually got a master's first, and I was fortunate enough to get an internship with the United States Bureau of Mines. And there was a Bureau of Mines here in Minnesota where I was at graduate school, because we have a lot of mining up in northern Minnesota off the shores of Lake Superior. So I studied mining exposures to minors of nitrogen dioxide and of diesel exhaust and coal dust. And then in my doctorate, I studied exposures of healthcare workers to airborne biological agents, like tuberculosis.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Does any of the studying and research make you not want to go outside and go into buildings? Are you constantly looking around you going, oh, this is not good?
No, I think it actually has had the opposite effect, that I know enough to actually feel pretty comfortable at most workplaces, and to know when I do need to put on a hard hat or a respirator or safety eyewear.
Well, that's, I guess, reassuring. Instead of walking into a building thinking, well, this is going to kill me. Great, thanks.
I will admit there have been a few places internationally where I've walked into a factory or walked onto a work site where I've thought, I'm glad I don't have to breathe this air every day. Or, you know, maybe that guy should wear some sort of harness if he's going to stand four stories off the ground.
So can you take us through, not a typical day, but maybe a case study of what it is that you do when you go into work?
Yeah, my day is different, probably from a typical occupational safety and health professional. Most people who work in occupational safety and health work at a factory, and they have a set of workers they're responsible for, and they're really busy day to day trying to make sure those workers aren't exposed to noise or chemicals or ergonomic hazards. But because I work at 3M and we supply personal protective equipment into any workplace in almost any country in the world, my day can start out early in the morning on a phone call with Asia, talking about situation there. I'm talk about how to make better personal protective equipment, how we can make it more comfortable for the worker, how we can make it adapt to their job tasks better. So we'll develop new products. I may work on writing an article that will go into some sort of magazine or creating a training presentation. I might work on a new regulation almost any country in the world, helping them have better occupational safety and health regulations. So I have a really varied job, which is part of what I love.
Do you get a lot of pushback? I mean, if you're dealing with governments or businesses that want to cut corners, you sort of have to be like, all right, there are corners and this is one you can't cut.
I would say in general, we don't get pushback, but what we get sometimes is conversations about how can we make this work for both of us. We want our workers to be healthy. We want them to be safe, but our budgets are limited. And so that's part of what I do and my team does, is we work to help them find both a justification for having good safety and health programs, but also, you know, to put a program in place that will help keep them in business. And I think more and more companies are realizing that it's more expensive to lose workers and have to retrain them than it is to keep them and keep them healthy and showing up every day strong and ready to work.
Yeah, well, it's hard to see that in the short run, right? But in the long run.
And I think as we have more of an internet society, you know, things that companies do that are bad get media attention.
Right.
And companies do not want to be the one that is on, you know, the internet feed or the news feed as the company that had the bad health and safety program and hurt workers or killed workers or had them all show up with cancer. Companies just, they can't have that anymore.
So that sort of makes your job easier then, doesn't it?
It does make it easier, particularly with the big companies, the multinational companies. When you go look at big companies, health and safety really is in the forefront and they have resources. And I think we've really made a lot of progress since I've been in the field. I do think sort of the governments and the world, we need to start making sure that we're also equipping the smaller businesses, the entrepreneurs, and to make sure we're reaching out and helping them have, you know, to first know what worker health and safety is, and then to make sure that they're they have access to resources. And most of the time, it's not that they need money resources, it's just that they need more education and understanding.
What's been the most surprising thing about this job?
That's a really good question. I think the most surprising thing about this job for me has been the variety. When I went through graduate school, it was here in the United States at the University of Minnesota, an excellent program, certainly a focus on respiratory hazards. And now that I've gotten out and been able to travel around the world and see different workplaces, I think just the variety of things that workers have to deal with as they try and do their job has really surprised me. And there's so many days when I go home and I think, wow, we're really behind. And then I kind of have to reset my thinking to, you know, there is so much more to do and there is so much more difference that we can make. And that's really what gets me super excited to go to work the next day or to keep working that night when I get home.
Well, at the risk of me not being able to sleep very well tonight, what are some of the unexpected, I guess, respiratory issues or things?
Oh, Mommy, you're going to regret this question.
I know.
Well, it depends on the industry you're in. I think we're still seeing a lot of exposures to things like silica, which is rock, and it can be in earth. It can be, you know, you see it a lot in mining. You see it a lot in construction. Anytime there's huge dust clouds from the earth, we could have a lot of silica in them. And there's still a lot of silica hazards around the world. I think in the U.S., if you're talking in the U.S., there aren't that many respiratory hazards in office environments, but we still nanotechnology and nanoparticles are being used a lot more in manufacturing and the products we have. And that's really in a field where the occupational safety and health community is starting to look more closely at, you know, what could the effects of airborne nanoparticles be? Are they similar to the other particles we're familiar with? Do they have different types of health effects? So I think that the nanoparticles are one that we're still exploring. Personally, my area of specialty from graduate school was airborne bacteria and viruses. And on a day-to-day basis, you are really no more exposed at work to airborne viruses and bacteria than you are in the grocery store, at home, unless you have a specialized job, like healthcare worker or, you know, taking care of animals, then perhaps you are. But you can sleep. You probably can sleep tonight.
Good.
Well, that, your nanoparticle thing makes me curious, because obviously with the changes in technology that are sort of exponentially increasing, you know, technology used to change sort of every decade or so, and now it's, you know, in 2 years you've got completely new technology and new equipment. How do you guys keep up? How do you even begin to keep up with the new stuff that's being developed on a daily basis?
So, for me personally, my team, we have a big network of people who do what I do for 3M around the world, and we just try to really keep in good touch. We try to forward articles. We have people who read journals. We work with university professors. I think the industrial hygiene and the occupational safety and health community as a whole is trying to do the same thing, and you could see organizations like the National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health, which is NIOSH here in the United States, they really do a lot of cutting-edge research on these areas when they see something that's emerging. So we do have some great institutions around the world that are out there and some great academics doing the cutting-edge research. And for my team, it's really making sure that we are going to the right conferences, that we're talking to the companies with the cutting edge technology, and really just trying to stay on top of what's happening now and what could be happening tomorrow.
I'm curious as to, you know, with your graduate research and you're working on respiratory, you know, illnesses and respiratory problems, do you miss doing research now or do you do it now? Or do you sort of miss the field part of it?
I do miss doing research. I like to do research, but I do get the opportunity to do like applied field research from time to time. I don't get to do as much bench research anymore, although I do have people who work for me who do it, so mm-hmm. I can go kind of glom on and stand in their lab for a day and feel like a real, you know, bench scientist again. And sometimes we will go out and work with companies and do research of, you know, what is actually going on at a particular workplace or set of workplaces? What are their exposures? But I don't miss it as much as I think I would miss public speaking or writing articles if I had to give that up.
Over the years at 3M, what has changed the most over time?
Probably me. Has changed more than anything. 3M is a very awesome company to work for, I have to say that. They're very science-oriented. Science applied to life is our motto, or our I'm not sure the branding people are going to like that, but science applied to life is really what drives us. And there's always new science being mm-hmm. done. There's always people coming up with new technologies. For my division, for what I work on, what's changed the most for me is that we did start pretty much worrying about respiratory hazards, and we've really expanded out worrying about many different types of hazards, back injuries, falling from heights, noise exposures, vibration. So I've been able to really broaden myself, and we've been able to go from talking about a worker's lungs to really trying to keep the worker, you know, overall safe and healthy. And as I look at the field of occupational safety and health, I think the field has really broadened from just worrying about, you know, the worker's exposures to really worrying about, you know, is the worker healthy? A wellness type of approach, which I think is very exciting.
So I have a office safety question, and Mumu's going to laugh at this. So my old office was
oh, I know this one. Okay.
Freezing. I mean, I run cold, but I was the desk that I sat at and a couple of my other colleagues sat at was closest to the window and was directly under an air conditioning vent. Could I have claimed that that is like not safe for me as a worker?
I'm not sure you'd get argument? Away with safety.
Very
but you
far.
Could sort of claim it under ergonomics that because you were so cold, you know, it made, when your hands are cold, when your extremities are cold, your blood goes to your core. Mm-hmm. So you could have said it makes it harder to type, it gives me ergonomic problems. That's probably mm-hmm. the way I would have gotten around it.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, it got to the point where several of us had space heaters.
And that is and where you could go and say, look, we can't work without a space heater, and the space heater could be a fire hazard, so you need to fix this.
Yeah, and then they'd say you can't have the space heater, too bad. No, okay, I was just curious, because we used to have that fight all the time, and I'm curious as to, I'm sure you run into that temperature as an issue.
I do see a lot of variations just in our own offices, where I think there's a certain segment of the population that likes it to be really cold, and a certain segment that's always cold, and I won't assign a gender to it or anything, but
never
do see that.
Anyway, thank you for humoring
me. No, it's something, you know, part of working to your potential, and I think part of where the field of occupational safety and health is going is into productivity, because we want workers, when workers are safe, when workers are healthy, when workers are comfortable, they produce more, and everybody's trying to do more with less these days. So it's not just keeping the workers safety, you know, safe and healthy. It's trying to get the most productivity out of them that's reasonable. And if you're freezing, if you're not comfortable, if things hurt, if you don't like what you're breathing, you are not going to be working to your, you know, prime condition.
Yeah. So what's your take on standing desks?
So I have one, but I have to admit I don't use it very much. I know, because the way the keyboard is set up is not very ergonomic. And so
oh no.
I can't use the keyboard when I stand. So if I'm on a long conference call, I will stand up. But if I'm trying to write a report or trying to type, I know, I need a different one. I do think that standing, I think anything that you can do to not sit all day is a really good thing. Whether it's getting up and having walking meetings, If it's just two of you and you could take a notebook and, you know, walk as you talk, if it's making the meeting 15 minutes and everybody stands, if it's getting a ball to sit on. Now, granted, if you work at a company that has an ergonomist, you should check with them first. But but I do think in general, getting people moving as often as possible is very important for both physical well-being, but also mental well-being.
What, so what are you looking forward, you know, as tech changes and as needs and you know, company issues change, what are you looking forward to working on, or what's coming down the pipe that is exciting to you?
So I think the answer differs for me by where in the world we're working. And in some countries, I'm just really excited about helping them strengthen their basic safety and health laws and helping them, you know, helping the workers develop more programs for workers so that, that they understand the risks and that we're improving working conditions. I'm excited about trying to work more with small businesses around in every country and trying to help make sure that, you know, I feel we're going to more of an entrepreneurial society. You see more small businesses, and I want to make sure that we are still able to keep those people safe and healthy going forward. But I also am very interested in helping protect us from any future disease outbreaks or pandemics that we might have, because that is my specialty. So I want to make sure the next H1N1 or the next MERS, the next Ebola, that we're better prepared and we can respond better and keep workers, particularly healthcare workers, safe and healthy. That's my personal kind of niche.
I'm panicking a little bit. Just so when you mention viruses and
pandemics,
I don't even know how to phrase this follow-up question. How concerned should I be, and what for like Zika or Ebola, and what steps can we take to prevent that in the workplace, I guess?
So in the workplace, I think
it's life too, but especially in the workplace. I
imagine. Live in a bubble. That's pretty much the answer.
No, it's really for most people, get your vaccines, wash your hands, stay home when you're sick. You know, don't go to work, work remotely if you need to. Those are the typical things that you can do to keep yourself healthy at work. Now, for some occupations like healthcare workers, social workers, law enforcement officers, they do need to for sure be getting their vaccines. They need to be washing their hands, but they also need to be watching to see if anything unusual is happening. And if it is, reporting it. But when we get into a situation like, you know, SARS or MERS or Ebola, what's been successful in the past, if you analyze some of the outbreaks, is to take a precautionary approach. And that means that if they put procedures in place, so sick, you know, people who are sick come into the hospital and only see one person, and that person happens to be wearing a lot of gear, and then once they're cleared, they can see other people. That approach is better early on, even if later it seems to be alarmist.
Okay, I think I sort of understand. Yeah.
Now, the problem with something like a virus or a bacteria is we can't go and test and see if some of these, you know, if a respirator will work to prevent it. We can't say, here, we have 10 healthcare workers and 5 of you are going to wear a respirator and 5 of you aren't, and we're going to spray a bunch of Ebola at you.
Yeah, nobody's going to sign up for that.
No, and ethically that's not possible. So we need to sort of look retrospectively and say what worked. But there's so many factors, because many of these diseases you can get by breathing in, but also if you stick your fingers in your mouth or your eyes or your nose. So you just have to think, okay, if I'm a healthcare worker and we're having a disease outbreak of something I'm not vaccinated against, it's better to take caution than it is to take risks.
So in other words, Mumu, we're not going to die tomorrow.
No, we're Excellent. Not going to die tomorrow. Maybe in a few, no, we aren't. But it's part of, you part of occupational safety and health, part of any business or any organization, is making sure that you are ready if business gets disrupted. So if your factory burns down, you want to know how you're going to, you know, move that manufacturing to another factory. If your workers get sick, you want to know how you're going to keep business going when those workers are sick. Are there different workers? Do you work in shifts? So being prepared for some sort of business disrupting event is really important. And when companies think about that, you know, they talk to the accountants and they talk to the manufacturing people, but they also talk to their occupational safety and health professionals, particularly when we talk about things like pandemic preparedness.
Do you watch stuff like Outbreak and TV shows like Containment and all that stuff and sit there and go, that's not how this works?
Yeah, it's not I do. That easy. I watch those shows and sometimes it just makes me crazy, so then I can't watch them because I start going, oh, you know, that respirator would never work for what you're trying to wear it for. Or that breathing tube is supposed to be hooked into a filter and it's just floating around. So I end up critiquing it without really actually enjoying the show.
So I was really going to ask one more question. Is there anything about your job and your field that sort of people don't know about or don't understand or misunderstand?
Yeah, well, I think most people don't even know that this field exists, to be honest. I think a lot of people go to work every day and they come home every day. And if their back hurts or if they're blowing black stuff out of their nose, they don't realize that there's a whole huge army of people out there that are trained and want to help. And so I think that's the main thing about the field that's misunderstood. I also think, like we talked about before, that maybe not everyone feels like we're there to help. Like maybe sometimes it's viewed as policing, especially when you start getting into OSHA regulations or, you know, you're doing things and they say, oh, we're doing that for a regulation or, you know, it's the government interfering. So I think those are probably the two biggest things. So really, you know, what my team does at 3M when we work with all these different companies and with different governments is just to try and help educate people that occupational safety and health is an important field. There's a lot of options for it, and we want to help people understand how to have the best program to help protect their workers, how to not impact too negatively on business. And if they're using the types of equipment that we make, we want to make sure that we're helping them use it properly so that it's helping. I was going to say there's also, you know, one of the benefits of working for a company like 3M is it is really big. It's really global and we have a lot of cool technologies. So I've been talking to you mostly today about, education and outreach and the field. But behind all of that is this really awesome equipment that we put a lot of cool technology in to make it lighter and more comfortable. So when workers do have to wear things like hard hats or fall protection harnesses, they aren't as, you know, they're more comfortable than they were years ago. And they're, you know, easier to work with. They adapt to their work environment more easily.
And you come up with like one, you try to come up with a product that can do all of this diverse stuff instead of having seven versions of the same thing.
It depends on the product. Some products, we do have one product that really is kind of, you know, adaptable to fit a variety of people or adjustable, or maybe the design is such that it just really does work. Or for a different product, we may have seven or eight different versions because we've really tailored it down to fit a certain person or we've had to make an adaptation to work in that environment. Hot or cold, you know, top of a mountain, bottom of a mine. So we do have a lot of different varieties of some equipment, and some equipment just comes in one or two.
That's really interesting. It's a whole world. I mean, there's so many, like, logistical things to work out all at once to make all work together.
It's pretty fun. And then you think about layering different things up on top of each other. You're putting safety glasses under a hard hat, and you want to make sure those work together.
So nothing is simple.
No, it's, and I think that's my favorite thing about the field of occupational safety and health, is that it really is an applied science. And in the U.S., most safety and health programs are master's levels, because you've got to have so much science to even start thinking about how you need to have biology, you need to have chemistry and physics, and you need to have good communication skills. So you need all of those strong science, but with some liberal arts, throw it in background to even start to think about how do we go out and assess the environment, find the hazards, evaluate the hazards, fix the hazards, communicate to the workers, communicate to the management, and then go back and check, is what you did working? And keep checking it over and over. And if they change a machine, if they change a person, if they move to a new country, you have to do it over and over. So it's never boring.
That's good.
It's really fun.
Well, Nikki, thank you so much for taking the time to tell us about this, because you're right, most people don't know about it, and to share sort of your experiences and your background about all of this.
Thank you. And I would just really encourage particularly people out there who like to work with people, who are interested in health, but also interested in engineering and mechanical stuff, to look at this as a career path, because there's so much more to do, and it's super interesting and exciting. So I really want to encourage people to consider occupational safety and health.
Like our show? Find us on iTunes or at scopepodcast.com, and follow us online on Facebook and Twitter at Scope Podcast. This is Moomoo Shu
and Lindsay Claiborne.
Our theme music was composed by The Copycats. Thanks for listening.